Good morning, everyone. Well, if you're hearing my voice, you know probably at least one thing about me, and that is that I have a job. Millions of Americans are getting laid off, though, and people all over the United States every week, and we get more jobless claims today, later on this morning, are saying goodbye to their workplace, to their coworkers. And how they do that maybe suggests the tone in which they will approach a real change in their lives. And so as we consider it a mission here on The Takeaway to get behind the numbers and to bring you voices, sentiments, the sort of hearts in the statistics of what's going on in the economy, we sent our own Femi Okeh off into the world to look at a slice of this.
Yes.
And we want to remind you before I let Femi go and tell you what she's learned, that we're actually looking for your stories of how you said goodbye in your workplace to your coworkers. What was your exit strategy? Was it a strategy or was it more of a tantrum? Tell us at 8778-MY-TAKE or my take at thetakeaway.org. And this was the slice that you went off to take a look at, how people are saying goodbye. And I actually thought it was a great idea. What did you find?
It was fascinating, John. I was starting to look at people's email. They were telling me how they were saying goodbye. And something occurred to me immediately that I couldn't do this by myself. What I really needed was some expert help. She's sitting just across the way from me here. Cheryl Spanier is a career consultant management manager. And Cheryl, you actually help people transition from one job to another job, keep on track with their career. So is there a good way or a bad way to say goodbye, Cheryl?
The best way to say goodbye is simply with heartfelt thanks and gratitude and a very simple short statement.
I'm going to share with you some of the email that I came across. So let's start with Alison Walker. Now, Alison worked in the entertainment division of the ACLU. Now, she was laid off in January. And on the very last afternoon at work, she spent an hour and a half composing a goodbye email, but she waited until the very last minute before sending it.
I packed up everything in my office and was getting ready to leave, and I hit send. I didn't even think it could have possibly gone out yet, and my office line started to ring, my cell phone started to buzz.
So Alison has a contact file of 6,000 people.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
There's a network.
Now, she was very selective about who she sent the email to. Cheryl, who should you be sending email to on your final goodbye?
I think you need to think strategically. What's the point and what's the message and who do you need to know about this message now?
Right. So
take this job and shove it is not your suggestion.
That might not work so well, John. Yeah. But this is what Alison did. She did think strategically. She didn't send the email to all 6,000. I think they were probably all forwarded eventually because her email went viral. She sent it to 1,000 colleagues and associates, and her email was basically witty, sad, hopeful, and of course angry.
King Bernie Madoff and other evil, greedy assholes like him destroying our economy has caused the ACLU to scale back and eliminate 36 positions. I, Alison Walker, have been eliminated.
Okay, so no shortage of personality there. And Alison's content, she thanked her colleagues. She talked about being inspired by, actually, of all things, a yoga retreat. She wanted to be that calm, meditative person that she was in her yoga lessons in real life. So on her mailing list, there was a theatre director called Eric Krebs, and Eric actually loved her email.
I thought, oh, this is an email that almost any one of us could write in our lives. I'm changing it all. I'm dropping what I've done. I am also in a place where I frequently think about, okay, what do I want to do in the rest of life? So there was some of me contained in her gleeful and rueful email.
Cheryl, I actually went to Alison's former employers and asked them about her email, and they said we're not going to comment on an individual case. But what are the repercussions if you upset or perhaps embarrass your boss?
Well, there are several things. First of all, she's seeking sympathy here, and she should be looking for support. So the very people who may empathize with her reaction immediately may then be her sources of future opportunities, including her current employer. So if you complain about, if you criticize, or even say, I think I'm going to, you know, go and be on a yoga retreat, the consequence of that is that they will think differently about you than perhaps you want them to when you start that job search.
Are there certain things that you shouldn't call your former boss, for instance?
Yes. Don't say anything negative about your former boss because there's going to be a future boss who's going to know about that. And do you think he wants you to work for him if you've spoken that way about your current employer?
And no kidnappings or holding them hostage or anything like that either, right? Okay.
You have to behave in the job search the way you want to be seen in the job.
So I found a famous email from a Bloomberg employee. I'm going to call him Mr. Angry. I know who he is, and we have been in contact. He was very, very upset about his boss, and he let all of his colleagues know about it.
I thought you were a cool manager, till, of course, you ascended to the ranks of tomfoolery, Napoleon syndrome, little man's disease, anyone? Why do you stomp so hard when you walk? You're like 67 pounds.
You're shaking your head, Cheryl.
This is beyond shocking. He may feel that way about this individual. To put it in writing, in a situation where anyone can then forward it and read it, really can backfire on him. And how does it make any difference in terms of his boss's future? Very little.
You have a book out called Leave Happy, Making the Elegant Executive Transition. One of our listeners actually sent us an email that I thought was beautifully elegant. His name is Philip Turner, and he used to be a book editor until January. And when I asked him to tell me what was the favorite part of the email that you sent to your colleagues, this is what he read to me.
I am viewing this as a kind of liberation in ramping up the search for my next act. I have some concrete ideas and early prospects about how I may again do what I call a purpose-driven imprint, even better this time around.
What's well, quite?
I know Phil Turner.
From your history of writing books, probably. Yes. Yeah, he's a great guy. He was told on the same day you're leaving the office, and that was it. So often you get this news, and it's right at the last minute, Cheryl. So if there's only one thing that we're going to remember from what you've been telling us today, what should that be?
I think this was an inspirational comment and really brilliant, because what he said to his readers was, this is okay for me, and then he primed them with an idea about what he's looking for next, what he's going to do next. So he thought about their feelings as well as his own.
I'm going to leave you with one final email story. This one comes from a journalist called Marcy Alberher. She sometimes actually comes on to talk to us here on The Takeaway. She talks about jobs, job opportunities. So what happened to her a few months ago? It's kind of ironic.
I was a blogger and columnist for the New York Times until the fall, the late fall, when my blog and column were suddenly, without any notice, called to an end. First, I wrote about my losing the blog in a blog post, and then I wrote a farewell to my readers post. And then what happened was extraordinary. I got an outpouring of support in the comments of my blog, but the really wonderful thing that happened is I got a lot of job opportunities.
So that's Marcy Alberher talking about her job opportunities. You have an opportunity to pick up Cheryl Spanier's Tips for an Elegant Exit. That's online at thetakeaway.org. And you can also see Alison Walker, the movie about bleeping Bernie Madoff. John.
Thank you, Femi. Your stories as well at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.